Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So excited about today and the podcast. We just met, first of all. I just mentioned it. But Chad and Tori Masters were here yesterday recording an episode, and they pumped you guys up so high.
Great.
I know y'all are married, mm-hmm. and Chad and Tori are married, but I kind of feel like y'all are all sort of like have a connection that's really pretty special.
Yeah, we do.
Well, Chad and I certainly have our bromance going on. Like, yes. I was just texting him earlier. I was like, so what room are we staying in and what room are the wives staying in? All I need is a roomy twin, you know, and we're good. That's kind of what I told him. It's like we've known them our whole lives, even though it's only been what?
That's what I was going to. Yeah, we've known them for maybe 6 months.
Yeah.
But it feels like we've known them our whole life. And it sounds so cliche and so cringy saying that. But yeah, no, it's a blessing to know them.
Well, y'all are Milena and Jordan Sisciotti. And is it Sisciotti, like with an Italian accent?
Yes.
Well, in Italian, it would be Cicciotti. Mm-hmm. But we just say Sisciotti because we're American.
Mm-hmm. So I actually first came across your podcast, Ask For Me in My House. Mm-hmm. I think it was 2019 when I came across it.
Okay, and right when it like...
So you're an OG.
Wow. OG.
Yeah, Noah, who's here, his dad had pulled a few podcasts that we were like looking at. Married couples that had podcasts that were mm-hmm. excellent, high quality, and we were looking at y'all's stuff back then.
Wow.
High quality, like with Olympia screaming in the background.
Yeah, that was back when, like, because when we launched it, our daughter was a month old. And I remember I used to, like, nurse her during the podcast episodes. And, like, it was as raw and unfiltered as it could possibly get.
And at first, we were going to, like, cut that out or try to muffle the sound, but then people started messaging us like, no, I think it's so sweet to hear Alethea cooing in the background.
It is. Yeah, it's authentic.
It just kind of makes it like you're in our family room with
like
us.
Literally like in our like little tiny office recording together.
Yeah.
But even the thumbnail is y'all sitting there, y'all styled it well, the branding for the show title and everything was well done.
Oh, that's all
Thanks.
Her.
Yeah. That's you can't, you know, there is a difference between, you know, just putting together a podcast, going on Canva and just creating a thumbnail real quick, then just mm-hmm. putting it out there. Mm-hmm. Whenever you have a stylistic nature to it and do it high quality, even if it's just the branding side of mm-hmm. it, it makes a difference. It makes it more approachable, and y'all did a great job.
Thank you.
And so that was a couple of years ago. You're in Detroit, Michigan area. Talk about life now.
I wish we could move because it's so cold over there.
Texas is calling us. I don't know. We'll see what the Lord has, but for now, like, I still work there. Our family's there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the Great White North, and it's cold, and it's like it was single digits Fahrenheit when we left this morning. But
yeah, we got like a storm last week. Yeah. We were supposed to get 16 inches, but we got like probably
we only got
six
10,
or
you know?
Seven.
But it's magical in the summer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's gorgeous
in the
summer.
Yeah, it is. Well,
everyone's like, oh, you get the seasons there, because I'm from South Florida originally, and she's from Brazil. Mm-hmm. So we just know like hot and rainy or dry.
Yeah.
And so having, you know, the leaves changing colors and all that, it's really cool. And yeah, so gosh, we've been, you know, been married for almost 5 years now. Mm-hmm. And we have two little adorable pride and joy kids, Alethea, who's going to be 3 next week, mm-hmm. and Ari's 1.5.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And we got one in the oven.
Yeah, so. I knew that. Congrats. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah, the Lord's just been so good to us. And, you know, it's certainly come with its challenges. And I feel like we've jam-packed a lot of life in a very short 5 years. Like, we mm-hmm. got, we were high school sweethearts. So
yeah,
when people are like, oh, you guys are so young to get married or to have kids, we think, well, first off, that's kind of relative. And second off, you know, we met when we were 15 and 17 mm-hmm. in high school. We started dating. And when Milena started to kind of do her thing on YouTube full time, it was something that really opened up a lot of doors for us to say, like, this is a ministry first and foremost to represent the Lord. Mm-hmm. And second off, to connect with people and share the gospel. And something that we do with our podcast mm-hmm. is kind of talk about just what's going on in our life and what the Lord puts on our heart. We try to not script it too much, just enough to kind of stay on task, because Milena and the Lord know I'll go on my tangents. But yeah, we just try to keep it real. And it's been,
what's church life up there? First of all I know about Michigan from like the political side is Whitmer, the governor up there, mm-hmm. During the COVID. So I would not want to judge an entire state based upon the politics of the moment of COVID. Yeah. However, the people you go through, I've been to Grand Rapids. We have a pastor friend in Kalamazoo, Michigan. I don't know a lot of people though in the Detroit area, church-wise especially.
Yeah.
What's the church environment like there?
So we recently started not bouncing around, but him and I met at church. So we went to like the youth Bible study. And so we had been at that church. Like, I started going there when I was like 4. Were you like 5? Like, we both started going there when we were really young, up until we got married. And then we were just praying about it, because we were like, Lord, is this where you want us? Because we were pregnant at the time. And I was like, where do you want us to raise our kids? And we wanted to make sure the Lord had us where he wanted us. We weren't just there because we were comfortable. And it's like what we knew. We knew everyone there. Like, we grew up there.
Big church, small church. What was it?
Big church. It was like a mega church. But it didn't feel so mega just because we had been there for so many years and we're involved in so many different ministries.
We played Mary and Joseph in the church show, like the Christmas show and stuff. I can't grow a beard now. Still can't grow a beard back then. But
what are you talking
what's
about?
What's on your face?
Well, you know.
You've got that really suave beard.
This is the Detroit, you know, hipster beard. Yeah. That's what it is. But, no, I mean, we were so connected there. And another thing, just to add to what Milena said, was at the time that we were kind of feeling the Lord stirring in us to kind of maybe step out of our comfort zone a little bit and mm-hmm. venture somewhere else. I was going through the Secret Service Academy, and it's a roughly 9-month total. It's like 2 phases training. So I was gone. And to add to that, Milena told me that she was pregnant with Alethea. Mm-hmm. Like, I came back after about a month of being away, and she's like, yeah, I'm pregnant. And mm-hmm.
the timing was so good. It was really, really good timing.
Yeah. So she basically went her whole pregnancy like without me. Mm-hmm. And so I had that in my mind, trying to focus on like doing my thing mm-hmm. and getting back home to be with her and Alethea when they were born. But that was like a really straining time. And then when COVID hit, all the churches start kind of, you know, closing and mm-hmm. Going online, which I was always of the persuasion, like, that's a temporary thing, or like, hey, you're mm-hmm. sick, like, you know, catch it online. But that's not how church is meant to be done, mm-hmm. you know? And I think when you forsake meeting together, I was just reading Hebrews 10, like, don't forsake meeting together, but mm-hmm. encourage one another all the more as you see the day of the Lord's return approaching. Mm-hmm. And so for us, we wanted to be in a community of a church family that was encouraging and strengthening one another in community and fellowship. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we started praying, and we said, Lord, we don't want to be comfortable. Like Milena said, we want to be obedient. So wherever you're leading us, we want to be open about that and receiving that. So we bounced around. Like Milena said, we kind of tried out this church, and there's a little bit smaller church nearby that I guess had some internal drama going on. We don't even know all the details, not our business, but they kind of ended up splitting, and we started praying and asking the Lord to just open up the door again. We're like, just started getting into a, like,
I know,
oh, this
we
is a
finally,
great church. And now
I finally
now
got the kids to like stay at like mm-hmm. the kids center without mm-hmm. crying the entire time. Like, they went,
which is a huge accomplishment.
Yeah. I know, they both went and stayed. And then the next week we got hit with this news, and I was like, okay.
Yeah. So it was a really miraculous story how the Lord just organically took this one guy who felt led to start. It was 8 couples mm-hmm. that was Milena and I were one of the 8 couples that like were part of the original meeting. And then the idea was to invite 2 couples. So then, you know, you'd kind of multiply the next mm-hmm. week and then the following week. And by like, what, 3 weeks, we were up to 100 people.
Wow.
All crammed in a basement.
There was not a penny was spent on like advertising, or there's no website, no social media page. It was just all word of mouth.
There wasn't even a church name yet.
Yeah, we didn't even have a church
name. Most mega churches start like that.
Yeah.
There's like this small group that meets mm-hmm. and all that fire and, you know, passion yeah. is what's bringing people there. And then you lose that because yep. it grows. And then, you know, but that, mm-hmm. I remember moments both at my dad's church growing up in a church here where it was the smallest time was whenever you felt the most passion because mm-hmm. you knew everyone there, you could see everyone. And then at some point it's 20,000 members mm-hmm. and you lose some of that,
yeah.
which is still good because it's ministering more people, but yeah. then it's hard to have that community feel to it. So y'all are in the mm-hmm. fun time of, yeah. Of church and that, in that environment. The getting married young, because y'all were 22 and 20, is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I was 20 when I got married.
Okay.
That was 24 years ago. Wow. So it's been a long time, but I remember being 20, getting married, starting a journey. Mm-hmm. But my wife and I, we lived in Amarillo for 2 years and then moved to the Metroplex. And we were pretty close. But, you know, the military, Secret Service side, how did that affect you so early on in the marriage?
Oh, gosh. It was so hard. But because we had been married for 6 months before you left, that was like essentially what our marriage was founded on. And yeah. I feel like we've slowly started to kind of like unpack. And it's funny because I was just thinking about this the other day of like how little we knew about marriage back then, which is so obvious, but we felt so confident in ourselves. But I feel like we're slowly still like unpacking some stuff that I feel like I've had to work through because I couldn't depend on Jordan because he literally wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And that's like so contrary to what a marriage should be. Like you are one together. Like you should be depending on each other. And so me having my like independence has been something that I feel like I've kind of had to like deal with and be like, no, like I don't need to be independent. Like we are a team together. We are one together. but slowly.
Well, let me give an example of that real quick. So what she means by we're a team is when the kids are having a meltdown and it's like 7:30, 8 p.m. when like they're supposed to be down.
Witching hour, like the mm-hmm. worst time of the day.
They're supposed to be like sleeping already for the night. But yeah. of course, they haven't been bathed. And of course, like there's just food everywhere yep. and everything's a mess. And I'm up to here and Milena's up to here. We start like pointing at each other.
Bickering at each other.
Like it's your fault or it's your fault. No, it's your. And then we're like, hold on. And so I've had to literally like stop in the middle of us like arguing and be mm-hmm. like, wait a second, babe.
Like hands.
Babe, we're a team. Like I'm not
these
against
kids are
you.
not gonna divide us, not gonna destroy us.
I was like, it's us versus them. You know?
Yeah.
But no, so like we just have to remind ourselves that, like Milena said, is being kind of in that formative time. Like there's no teacher like experience. And mm-hmm. so while we had certainly so many great mentors and resources in our pre-marriage season, mm-hmm. once we like tied the knot and man, this thing's for real, and we set our vows, we did all the whole thing and made it official. Now we're like, okay, how exactly does this work, you know? So uh-huh. kind of have to rely on that wisdom before us yeah. and start undoing some of the bad habits that we mm-hmm. picked up on originally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I got pregnant, so it felt like our first 6 months of marriage was like him being gone in the Secret Service and then like me being towards the end of our pregnancy and then having a baby, which having a baby definitely changes the dynamic, obviously.
All within what, a year and a half of being married? 2 years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So we had to like kind of navigate through that too.
The Secret Service is no joke. I was, my wife and I were eating at a Mexican food restaurant in North Dallas, 2008-ish. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, there's these guys in suits that walked in, giant. Uh-huh. Just they all felt like they were from another dimension, and
like the glasses and everything,
yeah,
all black.
And of course there was SUVs outside, mm-hmm. and Laura Bush and George Bush live in North Dallas area, and Laura Bush was having dinner or something with somebody. It's Mikusina is kind of a staple here. Mm-hmm. And I just thought to myself, where do they find these Secret Service guys? do they go on some sort of scouting yeah. mission just to pluck them out of places? Mm-hmm. And they're intense guys. So the Secret Service for you though, why was that on your radar? What did you want to do with that route in your career?
Yeah, so I actually, before that, I went to Bible college feeling that the Lord calling me into ministry. And I just always assumed that meant, well, go be a pastor at a church. Mm-hmm. And as I started getting to my final semester, my senior year of undergrad, and like, okay, I'm going to go get my MDiv and study in seminary, but I should probably see if I can start working at a church just because I'm getting married and like need to provide for my new family. And started throwing my resume out there. Started, of course, at our home church, the big mega church, and was a lot of absolutely, we'll get you in, we'll call you, we'll follow up, and then there was no follow up. That happened half a dozen times, and I just kept throwing something at the wall, hoping something would stick, and there wasn't anything happening. So I was like, I took a step back. I talked to my mentors and my parents, whom I revere and honor their advice so much, even today, especially today. And I was like, Lord, I thought you were calling me into this. And the Holy Spirit kind of prompted me in my heart to say, like, no, I want you to be the church out there. I want you to be on mission out there, not so much in the church. And so I got connected with a buddy of mine who was a chaplain at the time with the 82nd. And he's like, dude, have you ever thought about being a chaplain in the army? Like, we need chaplains. I was like, well, I always had a tremendous respect for the military and never really knew if it was for me. So prayed about it, God opened more doors. And next thing I know, I was in a military police battalion as a chaplain candidate and wow. Shadowing and became a, like, did that for a little while. And then we started doing As For Me In My House. And one of the best pieces of advice my mom gave me was, like, your ministry first and foremost is to your family. Mm-hmm. And so I started feeling a little bit of almost like a guilt. Like, I need to make sure my wife and my kids are ministered to before I can even minister to anyone else. Because if I don't have this somewhat in check, or at least mm-hmm. as my priority, then I'm not much help to anyone else. So that's when I kind of took another step back and said, well, I like what the Lord's doing and I feel like he's got me in the right spot, but still feeling like there's something professionally or I guess vocationally to do as well. And my father was in law enforcement. He just retired. And he's like, you ever thought about, you know, being an agent? There's a lot of
Was he in a federal agent?
DEA. Okay. Yeah. So he's like, there's a lot of people in law enforcement that need, you can almost like act as a chaplain and I think you'd make a good agent, this, that, and the other. I said, yeah, I'll pray about it and see what the Lord does. So mm-hmm. Secret Service needed a lot of people. And I guess they were pretty desperate because they hired me really quickly. And I was like, sweet, I guess I'm a Secret Service agent.
Okay, but
now.
It's not easy to get into it either.
I mean, there's a process.
It is a very intense process.
Yeah, there's a process. I mean, it's nothing out of the ordinary. It's like full scope, top secret, SCI background investigations mm-hmm. and polygraph exams where they stare into your soul and pull out all your deepest, dark secrets, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's pretty standard procedure.
Yeah, everyone goes through that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You don't, but the thing is, you don't want like a wacko with a gun.
No, you don't. Next to the president, you know. So you know. My in-laws, they work for a government facility, a nuclear facility. And they said to me at one point that at any given time, there's 5% of the people on the payroll that are moles. They're working for foreign governments. And you talk about the amount of Putin or whoever out there that's trying to get access to information, mm-hmm. that it would be difficult to know that you know that you know that you know that the person you're hiring hasn't been planted a long time ago mm-hmm. yeah. and is looking for the opportunity to join a government agency. Both yeah. on both sides. We're sending people over there too.
I'm going to get my, yeah. hold on, my tinfoil hat on.
Yeah.
yeah. No, you're exactly right. That stuff does happen. I mean, they do a very thorough job, but there's always stuff. That's why they'll recertify people's backgrounds every 5 years and mm-hmm. making sure, you know, why'd you go on this trip? Like, even if you go out of the country, like on a personal vacation, like they want to know where you're going, how long you're staying and all that. So yeah, there's a lot of try to put some fail safes in place. But again, it was did the Secret Service thing for a few years, and it was just really hard, just being completely honest. And guys told me that from the beginning, but there's still guys on the job, not knocking them, but literally would say to me, hey, you could always get another wife, can't get another Secret Service job. Mm-hmm. I'm like, how do you, I'm not.
And I would be in the same room, like sitting right next to Jordan.
Well, the divorce
like,
rate is in that industry, the divorce rate is very high.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there are guys that were married 4 or 5 times. Yeah. It's like, dude, why are you still getting married?
Yeah. And well, he was gone like 5 to 6 days out of the week.
Mm-hmm.
So he was gone a lot. And it wasn't like, oh, I know my schedule for the month. Like, I'm going here, here, here. Like, it would literally be like he would get a text at like 8 p.m. at night and he would have to like leave in a couple of hours. Mm-hmm. And at the time, our daughter was like 6 months old. And so it was just really challenging having like gone through the pregnancy alone and then essentially like the first year of my daughter's life alone too. It was stressful.
And talk a little bit about like the village, taking a village and like yes. how integral it was for
yeah.
like your mom and
yeah.
my family to be close by and mm-hmm. like really rely on in those times yeah. too. Cause you'd imagine I'm feeling pretty guilty about like, well, mm-hmm. duty calls, but I'm also like, see you next week. You know,
I know it was hard. It. Yeah. It was hard. Cause I didn't want to guilt trip him or like make him feel bad, but there would be times where I'm like, oh, it really sucks. They have to leave right now. Like, you know, she's so young, mm-hmm. like, so young when I think about it, because at the time we were kind of just surviving. We were not thriving. We were surviving mm-hmm. and barely surviving. Mm-hmm. So when you're going through that, you're not really thinking about anything. You're literally just going and just doing what you need to do to get things done. And had I not had like his mom and my mom and like my sister and like my village, I don't know how I would have done it, because it's so much pressure. And we have two dogs, mm-hmm. very needy dogs. Okay. We have pit bulls.
Some more children. Yeah.
Literally like having newborns. They mm-hmm. poop in the house still. Like, they're so obnoxious. Mm-hmm. So like taking care of them. And I was pregnant too.
This podcast is chill, because like the last time I watched, you had a dog on your lap.
Yes.
Microphones.
See? Yeah. It's pretty chill. Yes. Well, I mean, she's like chill when she wants to be, but like still, she's like a lot of work. They require a lot of attention.
And that's been a big theme in all of your content that you make and we make together, is like find your family, find your yeah. tribe, find your mm-hmm. your village, because it doesn't have to necessarily be your blood relatives. It could be
right.
close friends, or we have a lot of mm-hmm. military families that they're moving every few years and it's mm-hmm. like hard for them to put roots down and connect with people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they find people in this similar situation with them, and they like mm-hmm. they're like a pack. They're together. So we always encourage people, like, it takes a village to raise your kids and to mm-hmm. be there for one another, bearing one yeah. another's burdens, and mm-hmm. and as the scripture talks about. But that's for us just been such a godsend, and mm-hmm. even still today to have that.
Yeah, and I, like Jordan mentioned earlier, I was born in Brazil, and we moved
Portuguese.
I do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when we moved to America, I was like 3 years old, maybe a little bit younger, but all of our family lived there and still does live there. So I did not grow up with any family. It was just like my sister, my mom, and my dad. Mm. And that was it. And so I knew that like once we started having kids, that I wanted them to be involved with their grandparents, be involved with other people, and like give them this village, because you can't do it just by with your parents and your siblings, you know. And
is that going to keep you all in Michigan for a long time because yeah, of that?
That's the dilemma.
We're gonna have to move everybody.
That
here
is
the
dilemma.
Texas.
We'll always say, like, if we could just pick up everyone and just go somewhere warm, we
there's
would.
There's internet here. There's cameras. There's internet. You
guys got color TV. Here.
Yeah, we got everything you need. It's not hard.
I know, but yeah.
Well, I knew about the podcast. I really didn't know that you had a separate YouTube channel until recently, until I got to know the Masters. Mm-hmm. And you've got a massive following on your channel. Mm-hmm. The environment there is different. I'm probably not in your demographic target market.
No, you were like my 1%.
Yeah, you're doing like makeup videos.
I got like 99% girls.
Yeah. But it's a great channel. A lot of content. You do a lot of work there. You know, with an audience that large, you're going to get all the crazies coming out on YouTube. Mm-hmm. For example, my dad, he does marriage and he does end time stuff.
Okay.
And we just posted a video on flat earth theory, just kind of debunking it. And you would have thought that we just said, you know, that God had, you know, I don't know, just that the Garden of Eden wasn't real or whatever. People came out of nowhere going, yeah, how dare you? You were deceived. NASA's deceived you. I'm not talking about one or two people.
Yes. For you.
There was thousands of comments mm-hmm. from people saying, you are not reading the Bible the right way. When God created the world, there was four corners. It's flat. There's a firmament. And then some guy sent in like a 15-page PDF with graphics and charts and scripture.
Please tell me you had a thumb drive too.
Well, It was just
a quintessential.
So I'm sitting there thinking to myself, am I the one taking crazy pills? Isn't NASA deceiving me this whole time? I was like, is Elon even sending anything in space? Are there not satellites around? Mm-hmm. You start asking these simple questions going, if there's that many people that believe that the Earth is flat, what am I missing here? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. So the YouTube is just an opportunity for all of the people who have an opinion, first of all, but also have crazy statements to come mm-hmm. out.
Yeah.
And I've noticed a little bit of that on your channel. I've noticed a little bit of that. So, and I'll say this, I'll backdrop that with this statement. So Joel Osteen, who is, I know him personally through my family, met him personally. One of the nicest guys, honestly, I've ever met, hands down. In the pastoral world, he is, I don't know of another pastor who's purely as nice and genuinely as nice as he is. Mm-hmm. He loves the church. Mm-hmm. He serves the church. What you see on TV is just a little bit of a, just a little bit of a snippet of really what he does every weekend at Lakewood and all that. People just hate on him all day long. Mm-hmm. And I don't like it because I know him personally. It's the same thing I would say like with y'all is I know y'all now a little bit better, but through Chad and Tori and just getting to know your ministry, you're good people. So when people make comments, it's irritating because they don't know the real person.
Right.
They're seeing just a little bit of time on an internet channel.
Yeah.
So talk to me. I try not to look at any comments on our social. Sometimes you have to.
Yeah.
So how has that played into the universe that you've created?
Yeah. I just to the point that you're making, I feel like it's really easy to like dehumanize someone. Yes. Because it's like, oh, they're like on my screen, just like other people I see on commercials, or like, they just think you're not a real person. You don't have real feelings. Like it's just a show. It's not real life. And like what you're saying is just like scripted because that's what people are so used to. I feel like even though YouTube has been around for a while, like vlogs and stuff, like people like actually taking you into their home is still relatively new. So I think people are still kind of under the illusion that things are scripted or like there's this like whole scene set up. But in reality, it's not. It's like literally I am posting what is going on in my life. Like I am pregnant, so I will post about being pregnant. You know, it's not like, okay, in this season, you're going to be pregnant. Like, it's
real life.
You know? Yeah. So I feel like people easily come out of the woodworks and come out of nowhere because it's like, they have a lot of stuff to say. And because you're only seeing such a small glimpse, it's so easy to judge those like 10, 15 minutes and be like, well, if that's how this person is in those 10, 15 minutes, that's how they probably are 24 hours of the day. And it's like, no, not at all. There's like so much else that goes on, or like just like sitting down and seeing people makes you remember that they're human and they like have feelings and stuff. So yeah.
Well, I want to encourage you just to push through it because there's a lot of
people. I am.
Yeah. And I know you probably don't pay attention to some of it and you shouldn't.
Yeah.
My two cents on that too, just to compliment Milena, is I have a principle where I will never post or text or put something out on the interwebs that I would not say to somebody face to face. If I can't look you in the eye and tell you the exact same thing that I've written out in some scroll paragraph, I wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And I think that just for me is a personal conviction, but something I do, especially whenever, you know, the mob comes for Milena and crucifies something that she says or does or whatever. There's never winning with the mob. So you can't ever like, you know,
you never win.
So you just kind of stick to yourself and you might be humbled and ask the Lord to work on you. But for me, when I see things or kind of how I react is I'm really trying to discipline myself in the Lord to have prayer be my first response to these people. Because knowing what Milena just said is they don't know the real you. They just think that it's some, they think you're not human because of you posting a video on social media. And so that gives them free grounds and reins to do whatever, like the Colosseum with you or whatever. But I don't want to be double standard in my thinking. So I try to apply that same thing to that comment. Like there's a person behind this comment. There's a, for whatever reason that they feel that they need to do this. Like, what's going on in their life? What are
That's
they?
That's what I was
going
to say. Like the quote, like hurting people hurt others. It is so true. And if you don't think it is, just hop on the internet for a second. Yeah. You know, like there's no way that someone who is content and the Lord is like living through them would do stuff like that. So you really just have to pull back and be like, how could I, in my response, show them the love that they so desperately need?
Share about some of the messages that you heard from your mom and Melanie, people reaching out to them.
Oh yeah. So the Lord like really put on my heart to not address the stuff, but just kind of talk about a lot of what was going on. And it was like 100% just like the Holy Spirit speaking through me. Cause I was using words I don't use or like being all fancy and stuff. And I was like, it's just like before the Lord was just like, I was so into his word that he really, it was amazing. But, after that video came out, a couple of people actually ended up messaging me that had created like drama videos about me and apologized. And they were like, I thought I was doing the Lord's work, but it was not the Lord's work. And I feel so convicted and I am so sorry. And it was like, whoa, what? Like, I did not expect that at all. And this was like, I've just been in the season of like contentment. Like, I'm okay that people are going to come after us because they forever will. Like, they came after Jesus. They literally crucified Jesus. This is nothing new here. So yeah. I was content with all the drama staying and continuing getting worse. Like the Lord put such peace in my heart and such joy in my face that like, I just didn't really care. You know, it's kind of like, I'm so sorry you feel that way, but like the Lord is really calling me to do this. And the only person that will cancel me is the Lord. So until he tells me that he's done with this ministry, then I'll stop.
Yeah.
Not the people.
Well, the truth is that means you've arrived. That level
feels good to be here.
Well, it's just feels just really good. I mean, if you've gotten to a certain level where people are paying attention to your ministry, talking about it, picking it apart, whatever, it just means you've gotten to the size where you're reaching more people than ever, and so you're gonna have to, you know, eat the meat, spit out the bones.
Well,
kind of thing.
And the enemy attacks those who are glorifying God and expanding his kingdom. So I'm not threatened by the enemy.
And doesn't mean. I don't want anyone to misunderstand to think that we're above reproach or anything, or that, you know,
no.
The Lord hasn't humbled us in ways, because he certainly has.
Yes,
and will continue to, because we're still flawed and being sanctified. But at the same time, we know when like we need to own up to things, and when we just, like you said, just need to like push through and say, this is an attack, or this is not warranted, or this is completely fabricated, and I'm not going to apologize for it. And it reminds me of how my posture and Melania's posture is, how we desire to be whenever facing opposition like this. Reminds me of a clip of Jocko Willink during a podcast. Somebody asked him a email question, like, what if somebody like challenged you to a fight or bumped into you at a bar and like was like trying to be all tough and like macho and kind of outman you? He's like, oh, if I accidentally like cut someone off or accidentally bump into somebody and spill their drink, or it's like, hey, my bad, dude. Hey, can I buy you another one? Oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't see you there. Like, you're talking, this dude is like, he could kill you 8,000 ways with a paperclip. He's like,
with a pencil.
Yeah. I mean, he's a unit, and he's got like such a calm, mild manner response to things, because he's actually been in like heated situations. So I try to apply that same idea of like, we have nothing to prove. We have nothing to, we don't have a chip on our shoulder. We're just trying to do what the Lord's doing.
Yeah. And I have a daughter who's almost 15. I would be thrilled if she was watching your content. I mean, just getting to know, you know, from your perspective, how to be a wife, a mother, you know, how to go about your daily life. There's people on our team. Shout out to McKaylee from a social media team. She's the one that introduced us to the Masters originally, and also brought you guys into the fold. There's still an enormous amount of people out there that they care about that kind of content. They want to learn from people who are a little bit ahead of them, that are doing life in a very significant way. Having three kids is significant. I have three kids. You might as well just keep going. I don't know how many y'all want to have, but after
did the three like, because for us, going from 0 to 1 was a challenge. 1 to 2 was like, okay. Is 3 going to throw us off? Is 3 like...
Do you want to be encouraged or discouraged?
I just want the truth. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
You can't handle the truth.
Yeah,
we just want to be prepared.
Okay. This is this is the brutal honesty of a guy with three kids. So my daughter's 14, have a 10-year-old son and an 8-year-old son.
Okay.
We tried for 4 years to have our daughter, finally got pregnant, had her. We tried for like 3 years to have our son, finally had him. And then our third, I was actually going to go get fixed. No other way to say it. Mm-hmm. But I had lunch with a gentleman. And I haven't talked to him, I don't think, since. But he said, why would you take God out of the equation? He said, I'm not telling you what to do. He said, but I almost did what you were about to do. Mm. And if I didn't, there's two of our kids that I would not have if I did what you're about to do. And I was like, what are you saying? So I still was open to it. But I told Stephanie, let me let God kind of play this out. But we had done so much fertility for the first two. I was like, there's no chance we're having another one. Well, we got pregnant right after that.
Wow.
Yeah. I hear stories like that all the time, like the miracle, like never in a million years. But
I just told Stephanie, I don't know how to have sex because we were like on a rhythm. It was come home at lunch. I'm ovulating. I had to drop everything and go. And it was like that for a long time.
Oh my gosh.
And I told them yesterday, the masters, I said, it was like going to the office. And you know, you're just working so hard.
Lock it in. Like, All right.
No, you know, it's still, I mean, it's still fun. There's nothing wrong with sex, but at the end of the day, it was work. So the when we did,
wait, at least you were doing it right. Because I've like listened to different podcasts and like books on like fertility doctors, and they have gotten to the point where they will literally ask people what they are doing to have sex, because some people, sex is not what they think. And
I've heard
no, and then it's like, wait, and then literally they try it, and then a month later they're pregnant, and it's like, you weren't having sex, were you?
Only made it to third base.
Wow. We were literally having sex for all that time. But I think the stress of it all, there's a lot of things going on that, you know, you just don't realize. And first of all, God is the one that gives us all life.
Yeah.
And he's the one in control of it. So we can't control life. Mm-hmm. Only he can. So whatever. So we had three, and then my wife had a tubal. This might be oversharing. She's going to want to watch this later. She had a tubal afterwards after the third. Mm-hmm. And we had heard so many stories after that of people getting pregnant after a tubal that I actually went and had my procedure done. So we're like, if we get pregnant now,
strong.
You got to name that kid Isaac.
Yeah, that kid's going to going to cure something. So
that's awesome.
The third one was a game changer for us.
Oh, great. Okay.
So much so now that when we have all three, there's always one of them that's kind of doing their own thing, and it's a challenge. If I go back down to one kid, which in the beginning felt like one kid was, you know, a challenge. Mm-hmm. Now it's like a vacation. I don't even care where they are. It's like it's so easy with one kid nowadays. Mm-hmm. You're not worried about it. Yeah. That first one you micromanage. With the second one, the first one's getting away with a little bit more. You're focused on the second one. By the time the third one comes around, that third one, bless their hearts, it's like, okay, you're on your own for a while. we've learned for the first two that what will keep you alive, we'll just keep you there. Mm-hmm. And but he's fun. The third one's fun.
Yeah.
I don't know that I could do any more, but I wouldn't want to have any less.
Yeah.
But I would say that it's not easy from a parenting perspective, because there's if for your two kids you'll have now, y'all could each spend time with them, the quality time.
Yeah.
It's like with my boys, a lot of times I'm with them, and I really have to make purposeful time to spend one-on-one time with them. Mm-hmm. My daughter's in volleyball, my son's in football, my other son has stuff going on. So it's just, there's a lot going on. It's awesome. We love our family. But from a time management perspective, you got to get serious.
Yeah.
I remember telling Milena when we first got married, I realized how selfish I was when I had to now think of someone else before me. And then when we started having kids, it was
you don't have the choice.
It was that compounded. You're like, now I'm in charge of this. Like my buddy that I work out with is going through the same thing. He just, his daughter's like 2 months old, and this dude is like Sleeping Beauty, needs to get his 8 hours, and like, he's wasted if he doesn't get 8 hours of sleep. And I'm over here like, 4 hours. Wow. Like, I almost feel like Elf. Like, I got a full 40 minutes and I have to build a rocking chair, you know? But, it's just one of those things where what you're sharing about, you know, like my kids are involved in all these different volleyball, football. I remember my parents looking back now, like so involved in putting everything of themselves to the side so that my brother and I could be like their main focus. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's encouraged me to do the same now with Milena and with our kids, and to like be more sacrificial, self-sacrificial, because really I get joy from seeing them thriving.
So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, different seasons. I mean, when you have them so young, I noticed you had pinned a toddler video throwing tantrums on your channel. Mm-hmm. Whenever you have them that age, it is a little bit more of a, it's a different kind of challenge. Now, mm-hmm. when you have a daughter who's 14, goes from being a physically demanding job to emotionally demanding job.
Yes.
And girls, no offense, but girls have a lot of hormones
sure around that do. Age. Yeah.
And the boys are much more simple. We have to talk to them. Hey, you can't say nuts, butts, all that stuff all the time.
And well, I'm curious with your daughter, how has that dynamic changed over the years with you? Because I'm even seeing that with our daughters, who's almost 3 going on 18.
Literally,
she's sassy. She talks back. She's like the sweetest thing. No, she's like nice. A Sour Patch Kid. First they're sour, then they're sweet, then they're sour uh-huh. again somehow. But like it's just this back and forth. But how's that in your experience been to see kind of that more physical to emotional and the spiritual, of course, moving through all of that mm-hmm. in your experience?
Yeah, it's been good. They're all at a Christian school here in Grapevine. They're in church. We go to fellowship church. They're all in church. They all serve. They've all been saved and baptized, all of our kids. So they're very, very much committed to biblical stuff. We try to instill the faith side of it. But kids these days are facing so many new challenges. So for my daughter and I, we're built a lot more alike. So mm-hmm. I love her and we have a great relationship. But as she's kind of gone through puberty and gotten into those high school years, mm-hmm. the conversations are different. I was telling... I think I was telling Chad and Tori or somebody at the church today that on our Exo Marriage website, our Exo Marriage YouTube channel, our most popular YouTube video from Dave and Ashley is on oral sex. Mm. So my daughter, she's upstairs and she comes down. She's trying to be emotional, but she's faking the whole time. And she goes, "Dad, I just got on the Exo Marriage YouTube channel, and y'all's most popular video is on oral sex. I'm so embarrassed."
The words you never want to hear from your daughter.
So I was like, "You don't even know what that means." She goes, "No, I do too. My friends talk about it." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" So it was conversation about that.
Yeah.
But I thought to myself, you know, at least she's talking. At least we have a ministry where she's able to learn that stuff from a godly perspective.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that she even feels comfortable going downstairs and saying those words to you, you know?
Yeah. Well,
because I feel like awkward, with my, I know, but at least she like did it. I feel like I would never say anything like that around my dad.
Well, we've talked, Melania and I have like part of our pre-marriage sessions that we would do at our church was to kind of come together and see like what upbringings we each came from and mm-hmm. how that's going to like synergize as we're married. And of course, having different parents, even from different cultures and different continents, even mm-hmm. and different ways of life, that was a little bit of a rub for us because we kind of came into marriage like with expectations of, oh, well, you're going to do this because my dad always did that, or you're going to do this because my mom always did that. And mm-hmm. not really actually sitting down and thinking, hey, what lessons can we learn that maybe our parents were flawed in, and what are some great noble things that they've done that we want to emulate and build on. Mm-hmm. And I would say like for us, we want to have, and I think even the Hursts were sharing a little bit about this. Chelsea was saying how they're like, they want to have open conversations about finances in their house. And like, we want to be able to talk about sex, not in like a ooey gooey or like in your face kind of a way, but like it's a gift from God. He created it. And we have the ability to create life with God through this physical act. And I could never talk about sex with my parents.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't that they were weird about it. You just never talked to them about it. So the fact that your daughter can go to you and talk about
I'm going to say this to you. The internet does not forget. And so at some point your daughter's going to get on y'all's YouTube channel and she's going to be watching all y'all's videos.
Like Ace Ventura, like with the plunger.
Yes. Like, she's going to have a moment of okay guys, y'all are talking a lot. Yeah. I'm watching y'all in the bed talking about sex. We have a clip from y'all's show that we're going to play here quick. Y'all talk about scheduling sex, which I'm a huge believer in. Like you've got to, especially with kids, especially at a young age.
Yeah.
And we're going to, y'all have that ready to queued up. They're going to, is it playing behind me yet? They're going to play it.
Sex schedule. So, like I said, with our kids, it's really hard. You cannot have spontaneous sex. I mean, you can, but you can have a toddler looking at you like.
Ask us how we know.
Natalie, he actually walked in on us because she learned how to come out her crib.
Well, you know, at this age, though, you can just tell them you're cuddling.
She just so happens. Yes.
To we're wrestling.
But yeah, wrestling, cuddling, yeah, tickle fight.
Greeks did it naked.
Carve out the time and make the time. Because before that, we weren't really ever doing it because we were just too tired. We didn't have the time. Sometimes, like, it was just, we were just not on the same level. We weren't communicating with each other. So however much you want to have sex, I mean, I feel like there's no way you can have too much sex. You can definitely have too little. Find out what it is, 3 times a week, 4 times a week, every day, whatever. Figure out what works for you guys and then figure out a time. For us, nighttime is basically the only time that works. We work during the day. Our kids are here. Our family is here. You know, we're not really about to be doing that during the middle of the day like
that.
Yeah,
she's going to see this video one day. So, this is actually super important.
I will say, after doing the whole scheduling thing for a couple of months, we have now graduated.
The couples that don't understand this principle that you can actually... They think that everything's got to be spontaneous, that you're both in the mood at the same time. But if you don't have zones for sex, sometimes it never happens. So did y'all get any comments on that episode?
Well,
do we?
Well, before we get into that, I just want to talk about like being affectionate around your kids, because my daughter like does not like seeing us be affectionate. And that was like something we had to like...
From a jealousy perspective?
I guess... And it's not like we're like full blown making out, like even us like holding hands or hugging or even just like a small kiss, like she wouldn't like. And I felt like at first we're like, okay, we're not going to do that around her at all. But then I was like, no, like I want to be able to hold your hand and hug you whenever I want to. Like, I don't care if she's in the room or not. So
it's not like the 1940s where you have like the husband in this twin bed on this side of the wall and then the wife in this twin bed.
No, yeah, no. So we kind of had to like go through that, and like she's a little bit better about it now. But I feel like at first, like the reason we initially had to do the whole scheduling thing is because like if we didn't, then it was like we are never going to hug or kiss or do anything more than that. So first that was obstacle we had to go through. And then it was like, okay, so we're definitely not doing it enough and we definitely need to. So how are we going to do this? Because it's, if you know that like today's sex day, like great. It's a good day today.
You can get mentally prepared for it. Yeah.
Yes.
And that's something we've talked with Chad and Tori about too, is what was the analogy? It's men are like light switches and women microwaves and ovens.
Yes.
Oh, that's well, it. Well, well.
That's it.
My peripheral.
That's
my peripheral did not pick up the masters joining us.
And so it was like, okay, you just, I'm the microwave TV dinner, like pop me in, ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Melana is
you
like
have to preheat
the oven. What it's gotta warm up.
Mm-hmm.
Almost there. All right, cool. And then. We're good to go.
But the preheating could happen during the day, too. Because I feel like sometimes people think like, okay, as soon as you step into the bedroom, then we can start preheating. It's like, no, it's like it can be a little butt squeeze here, a little squeeze here. Like it can be something that happens like throughout the day, which is why I was saying it was kind of like a thing that we had to go through with Alethea, because
it could start in the morning.
Yeah.
It could start later in the day. It could be a text. It could be a whatever. It could be an act of service. However... your spouse likes to receive love you want to like play on certain creative ways to doing that throughout the day or throughout the week or whatever that might look like, because then you're just setting the tone for later where it's like, okay, we've been kind of building up and anticipating it. Now it's like, it's time to go.
Yeah.
I still find this a lot, that there is a sentiment for some women that their husband wants sex too much. And they use that as a way to make him feel weird or make him feel like he's not normal.
Yeah.
Guys, pretty much, I told Stephanie, I was like, I mean, we can go in the back warehouse of this the store we're in. I don't care. We'll go anywhere. Guys are just dumb like that. They're, we really have Most guys, I'm not going to paint with a broad brush. Who knows who's out there?
Right.
But by and large, women have a tendency to have to kind of get their mind right, get the environment right. Mm-hmm. If there's a kid at the door going, hey, mom, dad, I need some snacks or whatever. It's hard to set the mood.
Yeah.
But there's different seasons of marriage. Sometimes I've found that there's times where it's just awesome, easy. There's no challenges mm-hmm. to get everyone kind of on the same page. And there's other times where there's just too much stress involved. Mm-hmm. There's too many things mm-hmm. involved. Yeah. So do you find that schedule works 100% of the time, 95% of the time?
Well, that was something I was going to say. Like, we're not doing that anymore. That's because how old is that? That was probably like a year ago. But that was during a time where our son was still really young. He wasn't even one yet. Mm. So it was like we really did have to do that. But now I feel like they're a little bit older, 19 months, and our daughter's going to be 3, that we don't really need to do that anymore because we do have the time. But then our daughter recently started sleeping in our bed. So then it's like, okay, well, guess we're going to have to go downstairs. Like, we got to get more creative with it. So
it
I feel like
happened last
there's,
week.
There's different challenges with that.
Could not have.
That's real talk, guys.
Yeah.
There's no way around it. You got to find time to do it. And sometimes you just got to go with what you got.
Yep.
And also to that point, like, another thing Chad and Tori said was, like, if we're arguing or something one of us said really ticked the other one off, and that could have been earlier in the day, and it's like, dang it, I was trying to get in the mood, and now it's completely like spoiled. They're like, if you're upset, like, have sex, because a lot of times the physical connection will bring forth the emotional and further connection that you can kind of mend things up better. And I was like, yeah, let's try that.
Yeah, Jordan was really excited. Really excited.
I'm like, I can get over things quicker, I think, than Melina.
Yeah.
But it's certainly something we've seen has rang true for us too. Mm-hmm.
Well, I know being transparent's hard, but I know that a lot of people will learn from that and be encouraged by that. And a lot of people have questions about how they do connect on busy seasons with kids. Mm-hmm. So again, your kids are going to see this one day, but congratulations on putting
it
all out.
But they'll take notes. It's okay.
Yeah,
Hopefully they can apply it to their marriage.
You know, it's weird because my parents have been talking about this stuff. They used to tell the story. Okay. They would say, hey, we go walking in the morning. They were talking about scheduling sex. Mm. They go, we would go walking in the morning. We'd come back all sweaty and we would go in the room, lock the door. The kids were getting ready for school. And they would, because we were old enough, my sister would drive to school. Mm-hmm. We'd go, and then that's when we'd have sex. And they said this at a seminar one time, and I was like, I remember y'all walking in the door, sweaty, and now I have a mental image of you guys walking in the door. That's scarring for some kids. But now, fast forward, we're talking about the same thing, my wife and I. So it's full circle. And you want to show your kids the right way to have a marriage, get started, have sex, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But there is a period of time where they'll be like, you know, with the plunger, gagging it over.
Yeah.
I'm so excited this is your first time to Texas.
Yes, me too.
I did not realize that. And this is your first time as well?
No, I've been here many, many times.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can't talk about that. It was all Secret Service stuff, Homeland Security.
Yeah, most of it was, yeah.
Are we being monitored right now? Is Joe Biden listening to my phone calls?
I don't know. I don't know what he's listening to or not listening to these days, but that was my former life, so.
We had a girl on staff here that her husband was way into IT, but he knew a lot about the dark web, and he said it's real, and you don't want to go there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is that true?
It is. We have.
Should I be nervous right now? Tell me what I don't know, and tell me if I should get off the grid.
Well, let me see. What can I tell you that I won't have to kill you after?
Okay. Well.
No, I mean, there's a lot of, we do have like dark web task forces that'll work with state and locals, and it's anything. It's like, it's a free open market there. You can buy everything. And so obviously that poses
a problem.
It's
like very disturbing stuff though.
Yeah. I mean, the stuff with Operation Underground Rescue, and I know Tim Ballard, he was an HSI agent, and he was on a human trafficking group, and that's very closely tied with the dark web and all that, like tracking and stuff. I know it happens. It's just at this point, I'm like, I can't outsmart these people and their technology. So I'm going to trust the Lord to provide what he needs when he needs for me and what I need in the moment. But hopefully it doesn't have to come to like me getting the family off grid.
I pretty much assume at any point in my time of day, somebody's monitoring me. I got a camera somewhere or my phone's listening to me. I have a boring life anyway. You know, we have Life 360. I don't know if y'all do that with your family, but you can track everybody. Probably back in my college days, I wouldn't have wanted that. But now it's like, okay, well, going to work, going to school, whatever, for picking up kids. It's a boring life. If some dark web person wanted to track me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like chloroform.
You call me if anything happens.
Huh?
I'll be here. You call me.
I will. I will something call happens. You. Yes. If
something breaks, I'm on the next flight.
Okay, good. I need that. I need that in my Rolodex. I have a few buddies that were in SEALs, and those guys are intense. You talk about SEAL stuff and their level of commitment, but what they can do to you as a human. Those guys are tough. Mentally tough, physically tough as well. So I respect your game.
100%.
I respect what you're doing, but yes, please always just tell me if I'm on a radar of somebody, some terrorist group that's trying to hack my account or my Bitcoin. Chad and I want to know if our Bitcoin's being hacked. That's what we want to know.
Man, it's all decentralized, and it's even hard for law enforcement to like actually get a handle on, because it's all, you know, a transaction happens, it's like you can reverse it, or, you know, it's just,
but there's so many countries through cybersecurity trying to hack into all of our systems on a daily basis.
I always think like there's so many cases, because actually a lot of people don't know Secret Service is very involved with like financial crimes. That's actually how they started. Well, boring history lesson was like all the counterfeit currency that was going around right after the Civil War, where you kind of have this split from North and South, and there's like some states are printing their own money and like circulating that, and then they're trading with other states like, oh, what's this? Oh, we'll do our own too. And so Lincoln like basically enacted a law for the Treasury to have a law enforcement arm to regulate and stop all this counterfeiting going on. So we still actually retain some of that, but it's all, a lot of it's gone now digital or electronic, with like card and ID theft and all that, bank fraud. But crypto especially is like, Secret Service had one of the biggest cases out of Chicago of, I think there was a wallet of over $1 billion in crypto that was all illegitimate and using for all kinds of like criminal funding. So,
wow.
Is this
crazy. The most recent one? The Department of Justice that busted that?
So there's a little rub here with the Alphabet Boys, as we call them, FBI, HSI, DEA, Secrets. Like, they're all the Alphabet Boys. So Secret Service did it, but of course the Bureau comes in and they have to take credit for it.
Got it.
So
we got you. I see you.
That's how it happens. So we got to try to play nice with everyone, but it was originally a Secret Service agent that everyone wants in on the case. We're like, nope, this is mine. You can co-case it. So, it's crazy. There's so much of it that we just don't know. And I'm always of the mindset of like, if these people doing stuff illegally and for criminal profit would actually put their skills to good, like think how much different, like that'd be a game changer if they could actually. And sometimes they will, like they'll flip and they'll be like, all right, you caught me and I don't want to go to prison for the rest of my life. So yeah, I'll help you and like teach you guys stuff.
On Amazon Prime right now, Reacher. Have you watched it yet?
Mm-mm.
You need to binge Reacher. Like you are Reacher, you're like strong, but his the whole storyline is about counterfeit money. His brother was in the Homeland Security, and Reacher's kind of like, I don't know, just watch. It's awesome. It's good.
Have you watched Blacklist?
So the Masters are talking about Blacklist.
Oh, yeah.
I can't tell you what I'm watching because it's on HBO and probably nobody would know, but it's a really good show called Succession that I'm enjoying right now. But the I just said it's on HBO, Succession. Yes, I'm watching that. But I also just watched Reacher, which was really good.
Okay.
So the last thing I want to talk about is y'all are in town for our conference, EXO Conference, and this is our biggest conference of the year that we're doing. We go back to back. We go from Dallas to Houston, and both are really large conferences. This is the first one that we do of the year, and it's Valentine's weekend. So we have 3,000 people come in. We have over 300 churches that are going to be simulcasting it. We've got Chad and Tori on stage, going to be doing some MC stuff as well. So talk to me about the conference. This is y'all's first, I guess, experience really with XO.
Yeah.
Talk about a little bit your what you're expecting, what you've heard.
Yeah. The last time when Chad and Tori came, we hung out with them like straight off like the plane. They had like just gotten done with the conference.
We surprised them at the airport.
Yeah. Well, we surprised Chad.
Yeah.
Because Chad, it's hard to surprise Chad. So we had Tori in on it. But they could not stop raving about it. And we're like, okay, like, I really want to go. And because of our third baby, we really want to put our marriage first and kind of like prepare ourselves. Because with each baby that we've added, our marriage always gets pushed to the back burner. And so we really want to break that habit this time and like make sure that our marriage is at the very front of that.
It's good.
Because then we don't have to do as much like damage control. Like if it's not, if we're on top of it, then we don't have to go through all of that. So
it's a law of entropy, right? Like things are winding down. You move from order to chaos, not the other way around. So as you add more wild cards into the mix and another like kind of wave that you're trying to ride, it's like, okay, well, let's be proactive and do something to invest in our marriage together.
Yeah.
Even if it's only a weekend and just be preparing for the Lord to work in our hearts, both individually and together as a couple. And yeah, I'm stoked that it's Bible centered and Christ centered, because there's, while there might be other like beneficial marriage conferences or things out there, that's maybe general or not Christian necessarily. I mean, God created marriage. He created the relationship between man and woman. So for us to go back to the source of truth and the source of marriage, I'm excited to have everything from all the speakers to all the conversations that happen offline between. That's what I'm looking forward to, is just to see how the Lord works and all of that.
Yeah, it's a great experience. It really is. And our lineup this year is great, because was just my dad doing all of the sessions. I mean, he's great. I mean, he's like the Michael Jordan of marriage ministry, I guess. I don't know. So there's him and his content. He's 68 now, and he's still in the prime of his life. But there's, you know, Dave and Ashley, who are in their 40s. They've got four boys. They've got a different sort of flavor on things. There's a lot of different speakers now. I think we have 12 to 13, 14 speakers as part of the conference that are touching anything from money to blended families to whatever it is. Marriage is hard, and you need to find some information that can help you get to that next phase. And also, intentionality about your marriage is important. So if we can get couples there and get them connected and kind of carve off that time, it's doing something spiritually that they don't always find, it's impactful there, but it carries for a while. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people make this their annual kind of time together. They come, and we have 35 states represented, couples from UK, Canada come down. Mm-hmm. So it's a really fun, interesting time for marriage. And I love it. We have this is our 28th year in ministry as a ministry. I've been here for about 16 years. And marriage is, it's one of those things like, there's certain industries, taxes, there's always gonna be taxes. There's always gonna be marriage. People want to get married and do it the right way. So it's exciting. It's good. I love helping here at the organization, but I'm glad y'all are here this weekend.
Honored to be here.
Yeah. Thank you.
Chad was supposed to send me a picture of you with an afro, but he never did.
That one will just be our little secret. No, yeah. I could definitely get that to you.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Because nobody believes me when I tell them I had an afro back in seventh grade.
I wanted to see it.
It was an afro. I could throw a pick in it.
Wait, hold on. Are you a Lions fan?
No. I had to think about it for a second. I've given up on them.
Well, with Stafford being traded and going to the Rams and going to the Super Bowl.
I hope they do win. I'm voting for the Rams.
I am too. The Cowboys stink, so let's not go there. No, it was great to meet y'all. Thanks for being on here.
Thank you so much.